Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, where we discuss the latest DevOps news, AWS announcements, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It's September 3rd, 2025. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. Cloud Posse sells AWS reference architectures backed by Terraform so we can get you production ready in 2 weeks. If that sounds interesting, check out cloudposse.com. How can you maximize today's session? Well, first off, our format is very informal. You can engage as much as you like, ask questions, and if you're curious about any of our open source tools like Atmos, this is a great place to ask. And for those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. Join us live by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours, where you can register and get an invite to join our weekly call. So I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's session valuable, please share it with your team. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse, where you'll find a recording of this meeting in just a few hours. So with that said, here's what caught my attention this past week. All right. So first, we discussed last week that Bitnami was shutting down the public Docker registry that they have hosted. They have a last minute reprieve and extended it until September 29th. So what that means is after September 29th, they're going to destroy the public Docker image repository that backs, hundreds of Helm charts, probably in tens of thousands of Kubernetes clusters across the world. So we ourselves did an audit at Cloud Posse through all of our component library. We've updated all of our components that were relying on Bitnami Helm charts, and those are now using alternative sources, predominantly official sources that have their own Helm charts. So check that out if you're using our reference architecture. Make sure to update. What this means is if you don't update, you're probably gonna have problems with your images if any node gets lifecycled. So if any Kubernetes node comes online, needs to pull that Docker image, it's not going to be found. That service will crash loop. Your existing pods will probably survive until that server is destroyed. All servers are destroyed. Any questions on the Bitnami changes? All right, next topic. So it's kind of funny, you're spending too much time on GitHub when you don't see the release note, but you notice the feature in a buried in the UI this around the same day. I just noticed that releases now on GitHub support immutability. So GitHub, as you know, has been making a big push to secure the supply chain. Obviously, probably like 90% of open source, that pulling that number out of thin air, exists on GitHub. They're doing everything to try and protect it. There's been a few big public incidents where fraudulent artifacts, fraudulent tags, et cetera, have been pushed, and they're making that harder to do. One of those things is immutable releases. So releases on GitHub are similar to tags. Releases add the metadata, the release notes, the artifacts, the other surrounding information on a tag. And those have been mutable. You could actually delete those, edit those, and managing those has been not well guarded. Now, GitHub has made lots of little updates over the past month. So for one thing, you can create immutable tags, but you can also now create immutable releases. So the release cannot be edited or it cannot be modified in any way or deleted. The assets themselves can't be added as well. That's an interesting, I'm guessing that's after you publish a release. Yeah, exactly. So our workflow at Cloud Posse is we create a draft release, then we attach the artifacts, then we publish it. And now that means that we can also enable the immutability of that. What I am curious about immutability and supply chain stuff, there are certain things that maybe one doesn't want to be immutable, that one actually doesn't want to delete. I could understand delete, but never recreate. That I totally get. But delete but never delete and allow a vulnerable version to be out there, like the what was the XV attack, which basically rooted a machine. That's kind of like a release you'd want to delete. And I'm hoping there's a site, there's a channel, there's a mechanism to delete those kinds of releases.
Is this the same as immutable tags for GitHub Actions, or is this like a
It's
separate thing?
similar but different. So immutable tags came first, and tags can exist without a release. And now there are immutable releases, which are a layer on top of tags that GitHub provides.
Right, gotcha.
So to make this less opaque, if we go to Cloud Posse Atmos, for example, we can see all of our tags are here. Most of these tags correspond to a release, but like the V1,
You're
that's
not
a,
sharing.
oh, have I been? Oh yeah, this opened up in another window. Sorry, thank you. There we go. All right, do you see that? All right. Yeah. So in this case, V1 is a tag, but this is a release. And we can edit the release. In this case, we have not enabled the immutable releases on this, but we do have tag protection rules making sure that we have immutable tags. The new feature that we're talking about is when you go to the general settings. Under releases, this is the new thing that you should have access to, enable release
Gotcha.
immutability, which is different from when you go to rules and rule sets. You can create, this is how we structure our rule sets at Cloud Posse. Our best practice is to create very narrowly scoped rule sets. The way that GitHub evaluates rule sets is it's a composite of all of them. So it merges all the rule sets into one, and every condition has to match. So we create one that prevents tag creation, except for some apps, and prevent version tag deletion and so forth using wildcard expressions.
And I'm guessing you're managing these at the org level because this is too much for every single repo.
Yeah, we are doing that currently at Cloud Posse. So under what we have is under our oops, that's the wrong place. Where was settings? So under repository rule sets, here's where then we define the global organizational rule sets. So that works pretty well. These can also be managed by via Terraform. We are not managing them that way yet. There was also something new that I didn't know about. I was super excited about. Which one of our developers just told me about. So one of the big pains we've had is when you enable really strict rule sets, it even prevented creating new repositories because there's a moment in time when the repository doesn't satisfy all the rule sets. And that is now been resolved. Let's see.
That seems like a bit of a GitHub issue.
Yeah, that and it was there for a while, but there's a option now. To bypass that, where was it? Oh, the status check. So we require status checks to pass on to pass on certain things. And then this is the new feature they added. Do not require status checks on creation. And that made everything a lot easier. So. All right. Any questions on release immutability or tags? All right. Another little minor announcement. If you use ChatGPT, projects have been really powerful. And I create a lot of projects for different domains at cloud for different domains of my role. like legal, sales, marketing, Atmos, engineering, HR, and I organized all my conversations topically that way. But it's been annoying that that was really just a way to organize conversations, and that organization actually didn't make ChatGPT any smarter, and the memory was global. Well, now they've just made the ability to, in new projects, the memory can be localized to that project. So that's great because memory, you can get some pretty random like prompt injections from the memory when you're in one project because it remembers something that was said in a totally different project, and that's screwed me up many times. The downside is you have to, it's only on project creation and it's immutable. You can't, this setting cannot be changed later. And yeah, that's what stood out to me. Any other interesting updates with this release? Anyone else know about?
I know, I think I heard OpenAI did an IDE extension last week, which was a pretty big deal, pretty big release, and it seems very similar to their OpenAI CLI. But now it's in an IDE format, so it integrates with your VS Code, your Windsurf.
But there was a plugin before, so I'm a little confused what this is.
And
I
you're right, because just an hour ago we were talking about there's like four different codexes that exist, each are a different.
would... Yeah. This is what happened when you have, 2,000 employees vibe coding features every day. You get four implementations of the same thing.
Can't help but feel bad for security guys who are having to review each and every one of these.
Right. Yeah. That said, CodeRabbit has just gotten better and better and better. I feel like I've been really happy with its code reviews that we've been doing lately. And it has really good like project level domain knowledge, things that we've done throughout the pull request history. For example, in Atmos, it's catching that. So I love
That's nice.
that. Oh yeah, this was interesting. Amazon launches Infrastructure as Bash, a new open source project. It's a collection of developer-focused command line, basically scripts that orchestrate the Amazon CLI. Is my interpretation of it. And this is to make it easier to use AI to generate new scripts that interact with AWS. I don't know that that's a good precedent to set. There's a reason why we don't do it. I totally get it. When you got a little one-off thing, you just got to knock out. You're never going to touch it again. Okay, fine. Do it that way. But the problem is this manifests in the organization, and then you have like a make file calling bash scripts that bring up your environment and add tags later on, and it becomes mush. Yes, it's code. I don't give it any value. There's no value to that infrastructure code. It's just strictly like imperative programming of what APIs to do, but it has no understanding of the state or other operations or the impact of those changes. So avoid using shell scripting like this.
And even the off chance when it does come to like one-offs, remember back in just last year, the GCP deleting UniSuper's account, those insurance companies, and the root cause being when they first started out, some developer used their CLI to create the cloud in the first place. And by default, they had a rule and policy that any developer-created projects will be deleted 365 days later. That's what bit them, even for that one-off environment, just for testing, just to get the foot through the door, still comes back.
Thanks for tying making it come full circle. Yeah. All right, next one was an improvement to the GitHub repository creation piece. We've been suffering for so long with the repository creation because the status check flag thing that we recently discovered was available. So we haven't been using it. That said, now we can, and I'm excited for this. I think this screenshot really doesn't do it service because this looks like pretty much how it always has. I think what the improvement is if we go like to Cloud Posse, Terraform, AWS Components, and as a member, I'm going to go down here and I'm going to create a new repository. They have this field that you can fill out now here. This is really cool because if you imagine you have GitHub Actions now running that read the repository settings, you can automate the scaffolding creation based on these repository settings when the repository is created. And yeah, continue configuration. Well, yeah, we're not going to go through that right now. I don't know what's on the next screen yet. I haven't tried it. I just read the announcement this morning. The other thing that's been really annoying for us is we manage GitHub apps for our own purposes at Cloud Posse. We use a lot of GitHub apps. GitHub apps are the equivalent of basically service accounts for GitHub. So historically, people used personal access tokens. You would create a bot user. This is because the whole auth story was really bad at GitHub. Now, GitHub apps have very good support for fine-grained permissions, and you can request, downscoped permissions for a particular action you want to perform. And it allows you to manage them, use them more consistently across a lot of repositories. You can also generate ephemeral GitHub tokens as part of your app execution or GitHub Actions as we use it in our GitHub Action workflows. The kicker was that the org admin had to administer all those apps. I'm not sure if it was even that was enough. Maybe it was the org owner. Anyways, now you can delegate a team to manage an app, and that reduces the burden on the owner for those apps. Also for us, it's nice because when we work with customers, we can ask them to create the apps that we're going to use for our implementation, grant us temporary access to administer those and set them up and manage them for the customer until we're ready to hand off. So
I've actually had a problem with this portions of this as well. What I ended up doing, which really sucks, is creating a it's just service accounts, right? That I would end up having. You have to give them licenses, which
yeah,
is
server,
where
like use
you eat.
actual, yeah, exactly, actual user accounts, yeah.
Yeah. So I usually just have like an RW and an RO, and the RW is an org and enterprise owner. And then allow it to do the things that it needs per whichever. But you have to eat a license, which is just like, I mean, it's only two, but it sucks.
Yeah, but is the thing you were trying to do still a limitation? Because we are using, I don't know anywhere we're still using a user anymore for anything.
Well, it would be to create the like the PAT for automation within GitHub itself, right? Like if I was using Terraform to manage some of the settings, like the teams or the IDP mappings, things like that.
So yeah, oh, okay. So what we are doing for that is because you recall that on our last call we were talking about the new component we have for yeah, exactly. So what we're doing for that is using the GitHub, we're using a GitHub app with that. Oops. And what am I doing? Cloud Posse Terraform components. Boy, am I having trouble right now.
I mean, I've seen it. I guess I didn't realize like what, maybe I didn't go through it, like what type of authentication it was performing against GitHub to make those changes.
Yeah, let's see here. Dan is actually on the call who worked on this. Dan, you can probably direct me faster
Yeah.
to, do we have a sample workflow where we do the token exchange?
I don't think the workflow is included in here, but the way that it works is it just uses the GitHub app to authenticate and then just uses that level of access.
Okay. So you actually made a GitHub app for it then. Yeah.
Yeah, so we created a GitHub app, and then we're using the official GitHub action to which we use elsewhere to get a temporary GitHub token. So you don't use the GitHub app directly. You use the GitHub app to get a token, and then you use the token, and that token is in the environment so that everything else will work.
Are there limitations on that token from the org or enterprise level to
I mean,
perform actions or?
we're using this on GitHub Enterprise. There could be controls or limits that you maybe can place on that at the enterprise level. I don't know off the top of my head, but if those controls weren't explicitly set, this definitely works.
Yeah. I mean, because that's what always sucked between the fine grain and the pat, right? Was you had to use the pat to do like enterprise admin or org admin at, depending on whenever you made that. Because they just didn't have that level of granularity built in whenever I was last looking and before that, for the fine grain pat. So, or,
It
yeah,
is true. They have historically not supported enough, but they
but.
have lately really expanded the support of what they can do. And I shared in the Zoom chat the action that is the secret sauce that connects. You use this action here to get a temporary GitHub token, and then you use that for the rest of the execution.
Perfect. I really appreciate that.
And I shared the wrong, I shared, I didn't share the full thing. Oops. I meant that. Oh, okay. I just missed the version at the end. So yeah, give that a shot and let us know if you run into anything. So yeah, this update was just now that you can delegate that now to some team so they can administer their own apps, and that's pretty nice. Last one, this was a this is not yet released, but this is on the roadmap for the end of the year. And I thought this is pretty nice. So this would be something that at the GitHub Enterprise level, you can say what licenses you tolerate, and then this will presumably help protect you from using incompatible licenses with your software. So it's from Q4, yeah, October, December timeline. Last update here. So you'll recall on previous office hours, 1 or 2 weeks ago, we talked about the external secrets operator, which is like the most popular project for retrieving secrets from external stores and writing them as native Kubernetes secrets. It supports things like ASM, SSM, 1Password, and the list goes on. So that project was in search of maintainers, and they were going to pause releases indefinitely. Here is the latest update, what came of that. And it's kind of interesting how, they're using the Kubernetes Reddit to advertise this. So they've come up with their governance structure. They had over 300 people, raise their hand that they'd like to help. Obviously, supply chain concerns are severe in a project like this that's managing secrets. So, they're honest in saying that, nothing much is changing yet. And they're going to be ramping up on these maintainers as they build trust and so forth. But at least there is a path to maintaining this project. Separately, they talked about a CNCF application. So this is cool. They're looking at making this an official CNCF project, and then budget won't be a problem, of course. And then it'll receive the overall community support and attention that it needs by being in the CNCF. Again, this is just in the incubation stages. They're applying. They haven't checked the boxes yet. So with that, that's all I got. Any other interesting announcements this week? then. Well, yeah, let's transition into Q&A. Any questions we can get answered on the call today? Michael, are you on the line today? What are you up to? Oh, we don't have Michael.
I have a general question.
All right, go for it, Isaac.
You work with lots of companies, so I'm curious, beyond engineers using AI tools like Copilot or Claude Code, are you seeing wholesale adoption of any of the AI agents that promise heaven on earth? Like I know, for instance, YC companies, there are lots of agent companies there doing
Yeah.
or why for DevOps, for sales, for this, for that. What is your take on that? Are you seeing any of that in our field?
It's a good question. I know I don't know what tools the teams are using beyond everyone mentioning Claude, Claude Code or Cursor. But in terms of the other specialized AI solutions out there, we don't have any special insights into what's being adopted there. I think that's happening at a different level that we are operating at. So it's a good question. If anybody else has insights, I'd like to know. I know personally, I'm feeling overload. With the number of products coming out. And one I was looking at yesterday, I just started checking out a little bit more for Cloud Posse. And then when I started looking a little deeper, I quickly got cold feet and it looked really shady, like just AI generated slop.
There is this weird thing going on as well with some companies having poured money into various AI solutions, whether that be GitHub Copilot licenses or Windsurf licenses, are now looking for some sort of ROI on that. And how do you quantify that? How do you measure quote unquote productivity, which is AI based or just regular?
Yeah.
And
Also, I mean, well, and it's, yeah. And if you weren't tracking it before and you're starting now, then you're also not getting a really good indicator either, right? You're not
you don't
seeing
have a baseline.
together. Yeah. So, this is where everyone would go set, something like the Dora metrics or, deployment velocity or PRs merged or things like that. But
It is funny you mentioned how some stats are a little bit dodgy looking, and when you take a deeper look on Windsurf, when you log in, one of the first things it shows you on your profile page is how many lines of code or how much of a percentage of code has been written by Windsurf. And that's one of those things where it's a pretty high number. I'm not sure I agree with that. Are we counting auto completions, tab completions? Like, what counts as
yeah.
Windsurf did this for me? And of course, they are incentivized to make that number as high as possible. So, if any HR happens to be looking at the time, they want to show that, oh, these engineers, they're only working because of us. But yeah, not entirely
But it is
convinced.
nice that they at least have some measurable thing because you probably didn't know what it was before. I've been a huge fan of Willow Voice. We're using it, everyone at Cloud Posse. So another shout out to Willow Voice. If you haven't checked it out, check them out. You get a little function key and you can just dictate everything, but it's not just like stupid dictation. It'll like format the output and you can have a team dictionary and so forth, and the pricing is pretty competitive. Anyways, I bring all that up because I posted in the Zoom chat here kind of the dashboard that they have, and I've gotten a kick out of it. I'm a real blabbermouth. It saved me from typing 160,000 words so far.
I'm looking at the website. It even does bullet points. That's impressive.
Yeah. So it formats it in a nice structured way. You can set the tone and you can set a profile for punctuation, for example, and how you use it that way. So this combined with your Claude Code or Cursor or whatever you're doing is awesome because you're basically just managing now engineers by talking to them. These agents. And then another, this is semi-related to what Isaac asked, is that this I didn't learn this from a customer, but I learned this from one of my sales calls, to be honest. And I've just got, I am crazy about it. Go to conductor.build. And this is what I've been using to knock out so many features lately. Lots of things in progress. What I love about it is it just lets you manage any number of workspaces concurrently. And this is a thin layer on top of Claude Code. So it's just Claude Code that it's using under the hood. And you can add your repositories here. It provides as this screenshot here is out of date. For example, when you're on a pull request that is at where the checks are passing, it'll show that the checks are passing here in the top right where it says for changed. It'll let you start your dev servers on random ports so you can interact with it. So I feel like I suddenly have a team of 10 people working that I'm just directing through instructions. Definitely check out this. All right, some Chris, you were asking what we're using for our Cloud Posse landing page stack. We are hosting it. It's a Next.js app hosted on Vercel with a Neon backend, a Neon database. Sergey asks, everyone should tend to the latest TLS version. Or 1.2 for better compatibility. So the question is, yeah, should you go for the version of TLS that is more widely adopted or the most secure? I think it depends on I think it depends on a lot of things. If you're a cooking website, I think you can go with the greatest compatibility. And if you are a crypto trading desk, then maybe you should go for the most secure. Chris also mentions Whisperflow. Is this an alternative to Willow Voice? Let's see here. Yeah, so it sounds like it. Have you been using Whisper Voice, Chris? Yeah, so he's been using that. I wonder if this is the one I tried out. There's one of these I tried out because they said they supported iOS, but it was a miserable experience on iOS, so I haven't tried it out. You basically had to tab back and forth between apps in order to get it to work, and I'm guessing that's to get around certain security mechanisms inside of iOS. And then, Chris, did you happen to use Whisperflow on iOS by any chance? And was it good? Was it a positive or negative experience? Okay, you only tried it on Mac OS. And then Mark Tamsky shares Voice Inc, which you can just brew install. Cut off there. Voice Inc. Yep. So it seems like there's a few of these now. right, cool. Are you using the Mark, are you using VoiceSync? Yeah, no update there. Just a little bit. Okay. All right. Any other questions we can get answered? Oh, is VoiceSync entirely open source? Huh. GPL. Interesting. Any questions today? Any more questions?
I posted a link for MCP of for SteamPipe. I don't
Oh,
know
I
if they
missed
launched.
that. Oh,
Pretty good.
interesting. That's cool. SteamPipe. Do you use SteamPipe otherwise?
Yeah, for querying stuff in
Yeah.
AWS. So it's a nice tool.
That's cool. Have you tried this out yet?
Not yet. It's about to try it.
Yeah, good looking out. Yeah, that's an interesting one.
This looks super handy, especially if you have like a sprawl of AWS accounts.
Yep. Oh, and dude, have you seen the